My name is Richard Bach. I'm a lawyer with the firm of Stolries, Bowley, Fraser & Wise, and my practice is almost exclusively in the area of environmental law, with major emphasis these days on hazardous materials and substances, RCRA, CERCLA, TSCA issues. I'm here today as the chair of the DEQ Advisory Committee on Underground Storage Tanks. Fred Hansen asked me to serve in that position last August, and since then, our committee has been working to draft some legislation that we could bring to the legislature to cover the underground storage tank program. First of all, I understand that you've already had some testimony with respect to this bill from members of my committee, and I was out of town. I'm not privy to just what areas were covered, so I hope I'm not going to duplicate anything, but let me start out by giving you some of the background of our committee, the work that we did, and the philosophy and the objectives under which we were operating. First of all, the committee was selected by DEQ, and it was a very broad-based committee. We think we had representatives of most of the competing interests involved in the underground storage tank issues, tank users, tank installers, tank testers, tank manufacturers, environmental organizations, local governments, lawyers, manufacturers, the whole spectrum, the whole gamut of people involved. We worked hard to achieve a consensus in the development of this bill among those members of our committee, with the understanding that if any members of the committee had specific problems, they were very free to submit minority reports or come forward to the state legislature to give their objections or to raise the issues that they wanted to. I also want to thank the DEQ staff, which was very helpful to the committee in drafting this particular legislation. Our objective, our mandate, was to attempt to draft enabling legislation which would give the Environmental Quality Commission the authority to develop a program which would allow the state of Oregon to administer underground storage tanks under the 1984 RCRA amendments, the HSWA amendments, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. And as you indicated, you do recognize the fact that there will be regulation of underground storage tanks. Whether it's done by the federal government or by the state of Oregon, there is going to be regulation, and it is going to be at a specific level of standards mandated by Washington, D.C., and by Seattle. And if we don't take it under our own control here in Oregon, the orders will come from Washington, D.C., and they'll come out of Seattle EPA Region 10. Some of the first issues we discussed in our deliberations were some of the philosophical issues. One, whether or not this bill should be a bare-bones framework that would essentially just tell EQC to go forth and do good, or whether or not it should be a very detailed, point-by-point, word-for-word blueprint as to how EQC ought to regulate underground storage tanks. We tried to achieve something of a balance there by making it clear that the EQC would have rulemaking authority to do what it felt necessary to adopt a proper program after full APA-type rulemaking procedures. Balanced in some areas where with some specific directives from the legislature to EQC where it was felt that some specific directives were necessary in order to give EQC the guidance and the guidelines and the criteria necessary to move ahead. A second issue that we grappled with was whether or not the state program ought to be simply a carbon copy rubber stamp of the federal program, or whether it ought to be more stringent than the federal program across the board, or whether in some areas it ought to be the same as the federal program, and in some areas where there are peculiar interests of the state of Oregon, where it ought to be more stringent. Again, we felt that probably the best way to handle that would be to leave it to the EQC to determine after proper rulemaking proceedings, public hearings, and input from all the various interests involved to determine where more or less stringent requirements ought to be. Of course, with the understanding, of course, that no aspect of the program could be less stringent than the federal program. Then the third objective in our deliberations were to adopt a workable bill that would protect the health and the environment of the people of the state of Oregon without bankrupting the state or without putting responsible operators out of business. Now, I'd like to digress a little bit and respond to Mr. McLucas. We heard of a lot of the similar problems, that the small operators are going to have significant problems under this kind of bill. But those significant problems are not the making of the state of Oregon or the state legislature. They're the making of the federal RCRA requirements. And what we'll ask the state legislature to do is devise the funding mechanisms that will perhaps alleviate the burden on the smaller operators and perhaps, if necessary, shift it to those who can't afford to pay for the programs, and also make sure that the EQC has, again consistent with the federal program, the authority to implement and enforce the program in a way that won't automatically put the small operators out of business. There are financing mechanisms. There is room for leeway here in the state program that I think can achieve that objective. And again, to Mr. McLucas and to this committee, I think he and the other small operators will find that they'll be a lot better off dealing with the state and DEQ than they will be with EPA. As Fred Hansen puts it, when you show up at DEQ, you show up with your engineer. When you show up at EPA, you show up with your lawyer. And I think there's a big distinction in that mode of enforcement, that approach to compliance with the environmental laws in this state. And I think that everybody who's in the regulated community is going to find it a lot easier to deal with DEQ than they will with EPA Region 10. Now, with that background of those particular philosophical issues, I'd like to just discuss a little bit about some of the major issues that our committee focused on and tried to come to a consensus on. One was the issue of local preemption. The committee across the board, including the member representatives from local government, felt very strongly that it would be in the best interest of the state if we had a uniform across the statewide program without having every city, every municipality, every county, every local district have its own program with separate, conflicting, or duplicative requirements. So we felt very strongly that it was necessary to preempt local action in this bill develop a set of state standards. We did, however, at the request of the local government, put in some exemptions to that uniform statewide program. One was that nothing in this bill preempts a local community or local government from enforcing its land use laws. So if a community decided for one reason or another it wanted to completely ban underground storage tanks from a particular area within its jurisdiction, it could do so under the land use laws, as long as it didn't regulate those tanks differently in one part of the community than in another. Another aspect for local control was the notice to local governments in the event of a release. And the local governments and our committee felt that that was also important, that the local governments be able to adopt ordinances or regulations requiring notice from underground tank managers and operators in the event of a release. And the third area, if I remember correctly, fire and explosion hazards, and then hazard communications also. Some of the new hazard communications laws and regulations that are being adopted on worker right to know and community right to know issues. The local communities could still enforce regulations on those issues. We also provided for the EQC to have the ability to make special rules and regulations in special areas. We felt that there might be some areas of the state which had particularly sensitive environmental requirements that might require more stringent standards for underground storage tanks in all those areas. And we also felt that there were some areas of the state which might not require as stringent standards. In an area where the soil layers are more impervious, where the water table is way down, and where it's not likely that a release from a tank is going to cause significant environmental damage. So the EQC under sections 13 sub 2 has that authority to adopt different rules for different areas. A second area issue that we discussed in some detail was the issue of licensing under section 14 of Senate Bill 115. There is a perception throughout the community that a large part of the problem in dealing with underground storage tank is in the installation and testing area, and that people who are not qualified to do so have been designing and installing and maintaining and repairing underground storage tanks. It was felt very strongly by the entire community, the entire committee, that there should be a licensing program which would license and certify installers, testers, and designers of underground storage tanks to certain standards to be established by the EQC, and that it would be against the law to offer the services or provide services in these areas without being licensed. Those members of our committee who are in the installing and testing business and the tank supplying business also felt very strongly in favor of the licensing provisions, because they felt that it would give them protection against the fly-by-night operators, and the responsible, well-trained people wouldn't have to worry about being undercut in prices by the irresponsible operators. A third issue that we discussed, and I understand, and this is section 37, which would impose a lien upon property that has to be cleaned up by the state in connection with a release from an underground storage tank. And I understand that Craig Chisholm of Tycor, Title Insurance Company, was in here at one of the previous hearings and had some real problems with some of the title aspects of that lien provision. He and I have met. We've revised that section 37 to a way that I think is workable as far as I'm concerned, and he feels that it would now be workable. And it's my understanding that the DEQ will be bringing those revisions to you sometime within the next, at the next hearing.
Right.
So I just want to say that what comes to you next time, I've looked over and I've got no problems with anymore, and it's my understanding that Mr. Chisholm also approves of them.
Okay.
The next issue that we discussed was the question of financial responsibility. And this is going to be a very, very big issue and a very difficult issue, because this probably more than anything else is going to be what could either keep the small operators in business or put them out of business. Because the level of financial responsibility that's going to be required for any small tank operator to stay in business is going to be a very significant cost if that tank operator can get the financial responsibilities at all. You all know what the insurance situation is. Insurance companies these days are insuring, you're writing fire insurance on pig iron underwater, and that's about it. And environmental insurance is very difficult to get. The financial responsibility is going to be necessary. A financial responsibility provision is going to be necessary, I believe, in order to get EPA approval of the program. I understand Mr. Donica has talked to EPA and feels that it might be possible to get some approval with a deferral on that issue, but I'll let him address that because I don't have any information on it one way or the other. But I think that if we're going to get full approval of the program from EPA, financial assurance provision is going to be very important, and I think that a state funding or financing mechanism to provide that financial assurance for the small operators is going to be very, very necessary. The last issue that I want to discuss that I believe has not yet been touched upon by other people who have testified from our committee is the issue of liability. And that, although we don't have that directly in Senate Bill 115 at this time, is in Senate Bill 122 and does provide for the liability issues for both releases from underground storage tanks as well as spills or releases on the surface. And to that, I'd like to say that my committee has looked at those issues. I've looked at those issues, and I've worked very closely with the DEQ staff people who were drafting Senate Bill 122. I've talked to the chairman of the Remedial Action Committee that put together Senate Bill 122. And I think the way it's drafted now is a good, fair, and reasonable provision for imposing liability. It doesn't go as far in imposing liability as the federal CERCLA Superfund liability does. It goes more towards the bad actors and where the real culpability lies, rather than trying to catch innocent people who might have contributed to a spill or contamination of the groundwater. What I think it does is it gives the DEQ an additional tool to get a cleanup where there are clearly culpable parties at hand and available to do the cleanup. And with the understanding that in the event that it becomes necessary to go further, to go past those clearly culpable parties that are established by the Senate Bill 122 liability sections, the DEQ could still use the Section 107A liability under CERCLA, in federal court, of course, rather than state court. But DEQ could still go after those other liable parties under CERCLA. So by limiting the liability in Section 120, in Senate Bill 122, the state does not give up the broad spectrum of potentially liable parties that are available to it under the federal statute. One last item, listening to Ms. Gallagher's comments about the notice to people as to the location of underground storage tanks. Of course, the location of all underground storage tanks will be in the DEQ records. Those DEQ records presumably will be in Portland, and someone in East Maupin or somewhere else might find it difficult to get to the Portland record, so unless the DEQ sees fit to duplicate those records and have them available in their local district offices around the state. I'm not sure that it's a great idea to be cluttering up the deed records or the land use records with the thousands and thousands and thousands of storage tanks all over the state, even if a simple mechanism could be devised to have the county clerks be able to accept and record all those records. And remember, it's the title companies and the title reports that are the basic means by which people find out about encumbrances or other defects in their property title. And if these underground storage tanks locations were to show up in title reports, preliminary title reports, every time there's a property transaction, I think that would add significantly to the cost of title reports throughout the state, whether or not there was a particular tank on any given piece of property. The other aspect of it, too, is I sympathize with Ms. Gallagher in her position, her statement about the people who had lost their life savings because they bought a piece of property that used to be a gas station and found that there was gas tanks underneath there. Well, we've come to a day and age where, just like in Oregon, you don't buy a residence without doing a dry rot and a termite inspection. You don't buy a piece of property that's been used as a gas station without finding out whether there was a gas tank down there and without finding out whether there was a leak from that gas tank. I think anybody who buys a gas tank a gas station property or any kind of industrial or commercial property without doing some at least cursory investigation to find out whether or not there's a problem there is being very foolish. Perhaps it's caveat emptor, but I think people have to have some responsibility to find out what they're buying and not just walk in blindly to a situation and then complain when they find that they've gotten stuck later.
Senator Cairns.
May I interrupt at that
point? Yes, sir.
So it's your position that if I have a light industrial or commercial use in or actually have a farm use and have a tank and cap it off below ground and cover it up, that I don't need to disclose to you or have some other way for you to find, actually get disclosure as to the siting of that tank on your property, that is to say, property I'm trying to sell to you?
No, sir. First of all, if that tank has been leaking and has caused contamination, subsequent landowners, if they buy the property, whether or not they knew that tank was there or not, are going to be liable under the federal law, under CERCLA, under Superfund, for the cleanup. So
if I buy it.
If you buy it, that's right.
I want to.
Okay, now you want to buy it, and you want to know whether there's any problem there or not.
Yes.
Okay, first of all, the location of that tank, if it was capped off and closed up after 1974, will be in the DEQ records, if the owner of the property recorded it the way he was supposed to prior to May 8, 1986. Under the federal law and under the DEQ program.
That 12-year period, then, we've got the 12-year window where the location of that tank is on a record now. Is that correct?
Yeah. And of course, any tanks subsequent to that date. Tanks that are installed subscequent to May 1986 have to be recorded with the DEQ.
Right.
Senator Cairns, I'm sure that you would think of contacting the DEQ when you were looking at a piece of farm property in western Lane County.
I certainly would.
Well, with all due respect, you'd be well advised to. But, the basic thing you've got to do, first of all, is ask the seller whether there are any tanks down there.
And he lies. He or she lies.
Well, then if he or she is willing to lie about that, they probably wouldn't record the tank anyway. What you've got to do is put penalties on the person who lies or fails to record the tank in the DEQ records. But just recording it in one other place isn't going to protect the innocent purchaser against the bad actor.
Okay. So a person, it isn't what, Mr. Chairman, it may not be caveat emptor, but it certainly is a market situation where a wise buyer or prospective buyer had better know the rules of the game.
I think that's right. And in this day and age, the consequences for not knowing the rules of the game are so horrendous that the wise buyer really had ought to know.
Okay.
Let me just finish up then. Basically, I think what you have before you is an excellent bill. It's going to need, obviously, some work in the area of financial responsibility and the funding mechanisms, which are beyond the purview of my testimony today. But I think it's a good bill. I think it's a workable bill. I think it has pretty much the support of a wide range of the community, and I commend it to your endorsement. Thank you. And I'd be pleased to answer any questions that anyone might have.
Any questions for Mr. Bach?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kintyre.
Yes, you made the statement that something to the effect that you'd recommend, or the committee recommended, different rules under different soil conditions or so forth, environmental conditions.
Yes, sir.
Would this be permissible for the EPA? Are we going to run a file of them there?
I believe that this were, if the regulations are properly drafted and the varying or the different criteria or different standards would not impose a threat to the health of the environment, mm-hmm. Yes, it would be acceptable to EPA. And if you'll recall, in section 13 sub 2, we provide that the commission, of course, may adopt more stringent rules, mm-hmm. but it may also adopt less stringent rules consistent with the protection of public health, safety, welfare, or the environment.
Yeah.
And I think with that mandate or that caveat in there would be acceptable to EPA.
Well, it makes sense to me, but I was just wondering about dealing with EPA on it after what you'd said about their rigidity and others have said here.
Excuse me, Senator. Have you discussed this bill with the EPA people at all?
Her coat's here.
Mm-hmm. So I take it you have sent it, though, to EPA for review.
Further questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Bach. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Final witness on 115 is Scott Ashcombe.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Scott Ashcombe. I'm today with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I was a member of Dick's advisory committee on this bill, participated in its drafting, and am aware of some of the problems that this committee is going to have to deal with. I'm going to address my comments basically to sections 27 and 28, which is the financial liability question. You're going to hear a lot of different opinions and points of view on this issue. Basically, the time frame on the RCRA allows the EPA to undertake a process of basically drafting rules in a timeline that stretches well into 1988-1989. And in this process, various parts of the RCRA amendments, which passed a few years ago, are going to be dealt with by the EPA. This bill, 115, 116, 122, and 123, is an attempt to put Oregon in place to be able to administer the EPA laws in the state of Oregon from the DEQ. So whatever this committee decides in its wisdom to do in this bill will probably have to be changed contingent on some future development in the EPA rulemaking process. I don't see any way out unless we're, in our prescience, able to anticipate exactly what the EPA administrative process is going to do with regard to rules and regulations. Our concern here is with the financial responsibility section, or with the, I call it the insurance fund, and the creation of the insurance fund. The bottom line on this, from our point of view, is that we, in the language, the language that's currently in section 27, 28 of the bill won't work, and I think you all know that. It puts all of the burden for supporting this insurance fund on fees. And the fees then are going to basically be paid by one class of owner-operators of underground storage tanks. We're basically arguing to broaden that fee base in the bill so that if a bill passes in this session, we have the greatest probability of getting acceptance from the EPA administrator for the DEQ to administer the program in Oregon. Right now, I just want you to know the advisory committee on the insurance fund and the liability financial responsibility issue is split 50-50 in the committee. So it's a tough issue. We went over it quite a bit and arrived at that kind of a consensus. The current wording, basically page 10, line 27 and 28, mandates that this fund be supported only by fees.
Hi, this is Jackie.
It's our understanding, however, that the Superfund reauthorization bill last year passed by Congress allowed the insurance fund to be supported by other funds as well as fees.
Okay, great.
We accordingly support a broadening of the fee base to support the insurance fund by assessing fees by tank rather than by facility. And secondly, by reducing the per-tank assessment accordingly. We also would like to argue that maybe an increased amount of general funds could be made available to support the insurance fund. The way this would work, for right now I find out from the DEQ that they're estimating that there's three tanks per facility. And they're going to assess, just to deal with one of the assessed fees, they're estimating a $90 per facility fee. That comes up to roughly, if the average that they're guessing at is correct, at 30 cents a tank. If you were to raise the per tank fee to $40 per tank and assess it on a tank by tank basis rather than by facility, you raise 120 in fees instead of the 90. So this is what I mean by broadening the fee base in order to more adequately support that insurance fund. And if you were to do this in a careful enough way and consider all of the various funding sources that we need to, I think, go into some detail. You might be able to come up with a Section 27 and 28 that the EPA administrator would buy off on and allow the DEQ to administer the program. In any event, the effective date of this insurance liability fee, we think, should be pressed back to, say, 1990 sometime, January 1st or July 1st, 1990. But I think that that the fund that this committee constructs should be very carefully constructed not to put the entire burden, as it is now with the current wording, just on a single class of underground storage tank owners and operators, and to broaden that fee base somewhat.
Scott, I don't understand. Why is it currently on a single class of underground storage tank operators? Isn't it on everybody that owns an underground storage tank?
Yes, I think basically there's many ways to expand the fee base. You could expand the fee base, for example, as had been proposed, you know, on hearings, in hearings on these bills so far, by general funding it, in addition to the fees. That then brings the public into a position of financial responsibility, rather than just having it be supported by fees alone, which is what Section 27 or 28 does now.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about, is that it's a single class of operators that are bearing the entire cost for the insurance costs. And I got in the estimate. Another thing that troubles us a little bit, that the DEQ is using an estimation of about $2,000 as an annual insurance fund fee cost. So that's pretty darn stiff. It hits our farmers probably a lot harder than it would hit some other classes of storage of oil tank owners and operators. That's the reason why I'm arguing this way. I'm basically concerned that the little guy gets hit a little bit harder than some others. For example, the military.